Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Penalty Loop Podcast, a podcast about biathlon by Jordan Gottschalk from Penalty Loop and a regular guest, RJ Weiss from Biathlon Analytics.
RJ, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, but my question to you is, Are you still stunned?
I'm still stunned. So we are recording late. And my poor feeble brain is really having a difficult time comprehending what we watched.
Yeah, it was quite a race weekend. And I'm referring to your message of Saturday stating, if Johan Stingesbo wins tomorrow, I'll be stunned.
But yes,
he stuns me
I know.
All the time.
I know. I'm stunned. So it's funny, I was actually just scrolling through and I pulled up your message from Saturday, which said, yeah, but I'm still not counting him out for the win.
Yeah, although I think that was followed by, but I also would not be shocked if he you know, messes up completely. But
so I will say, so RJ texted me, this was maybe like 15 or 20 minutes before the pursuit race. And it was about how he had this, he just couldn't shake the thought of JT just coming across the finish line all by himself. And for for a long time, it didn't look like that was going to be the case. But guess what? He ended up coming across the finish line all by himself.
Yeah. What a show. And unfortunately, you guys can't see it, but I showed a screenshot of the zeroing of JT. Yeah. And other than, you know, two shots that were like maybe a centimeter or what, half an inch off. Yeah. The first five, the four shots were all basically touching each other. Mm-hmm. And then the second five, you couldn't even identify the four holes. They were so close together.
Didn't you say, Ziggy Mazze, he just stacked magnets on top of each other?
He had to stack magnets on top of each other. And I was even, I reached out to my coach yesterday earlier that I was like, What do you say to an athlete that has basically four holes that are all connected and one that's just a little bit off? Because, you know, but our common feedback when we're zeroing, when it's either like, yeah, shoot another five because it's all over the place. So let's try to get a bit more together. You know, we have a good zero when it's all in the big target.
Yeah.
And then, And then, so with zeroing, they have no heart rate. The first two sets, mm-hmm. they shoot without a heart rate, basically. So, you know, of course, they're going to be pretty accurate. But to have four out of five basically go through
the same hole. Yeah.
It's incredible. Yeah, it was a good indicator of what was to come.
Holy cow. Yeah, and it was, you were locked in on that because you were sending me his zeroing. This was, you know, before the race coming on and... I don't know if you called it, if you had an inkling, you had a feeling, but that was, yeah, I think you said it was clinical, right? It was just an exceptional race.
He's going to be clinical and he's going to cruise across the finish line.
Yeah, and he did. He did. But, he had to work a lot to have the ability to cruise across the finish line.
No kidding.
But yeah. He did cruise. I think the way you know it was a great race, and there are a lot of indicators that it was a great race, but the top four guys came across the finish line and they all collapsed. Like they all just, they all just went other than, straight to
Even Bo actually.
He did too.
Bo actually collapsed. Yeah.
It was, man, that was incredible. If you guys haven't picked up yet, we're talking about the pursuit that just happened. So
And I think I figured out Jacqueline's issue.
What's that?
I think he is convinced that he has an automatic machine gun instead of a rifle.
His shooting was outrageous.
The third shooting was... I was saying on Friday, I think I messaged you, like, do you have a delay? Because the audio was just a bit faster than the video or the visual.
Yeah.
And so I missed the fact that, you know, when somebody goes and stand... Mm-hmm. Get ready for shooting. It's almost like I focused then as well. And he had already taken the first two shots. And I didn't even see if they were hits or misses because the broadcast couldn't keep up. But then the other, he seems to do that when he has two misses in a row. He kind of, it's not even that he, like other athletes will take a sort of a break and reposition themselves. But he just keeps going. Takes his he takes his head out of the the little when they have it right in front.
Yeah.
And he shakes his head and then he puts it back. And it's not to loosen his neck muscles, it's because he's just disgusted with himself.
Yeah.
And I think the fifth shot he it's almost like he just pulled it to get rid of it.
Well, and you saw the coaches too, right? Like the coaches, like they knew. Right as it was happening, I don't even know if they watched the last shot. They were just like, "Oh, here we go."
Yeah, and it's, I mean, let's not get into it again, but it's just so unfortunate. You just feel like if you would just take at least 1 second extra for each shot, see it as in, because I think for him, it's almost like it's a set of five rather than five individual shots.
Yeah,
and he's just so keen, but I'll give him credit, a lot of credit for shooting all five in his last shooting, and B, for holding off Legrait at the finish line. I don't think Legrait is you know, a sprinter or like a end sprint person per se, but still, he Jacqueline had the three penalty loops and was pretty dead by the end of the race, but he held him off on pure grit.
He really did. So I was saying after the race that I think this was the quintessential Jacqueline race, because he starts out and he hits his first 10 shots. And on those first three laps, like he's going for it. Mm-hmm. I think it was lap two that he was putting time in on everybody. Like Jay Thibault didn't make up a single second on Jacqueline. I think Jacqueline actually gained time on him those first couple laps. And that's just what he does all the time. Like he goes hard. Yeah. Like he is inadvisably so going too hard. Then he gets to the third shooting and does his rapid fire, semi-automatic, with the three misses, the head shake, and you're like, well, here we go. Right. And, and it looks like he's going to lose it, but then somehow pulls it back together 5 for 5 in 17 seconds in the last shooting, which easily could have been like a 1 for 5, but 5 for 5 gets himself into a lead, but also has nothing left in the tank. And then, gets blown by, I like you said, major credit to him for holding it together and still making the podium, because I think earlier in the season, even that's a race where he falls into fourth, right? Because he just collapses in the last lap.
Just gives up completely almost
after the 2 for 5 shooting. Yeah. But that was that was wild. I do think that Jacqueline has turned a corner of sorts, right? He had two podiums this week. That was the first time he's done that since December of 22.
Yeah. And his ski speed was incredible.
Yes, and he's looking more like himself. He still has Jacqueline moments, right? It was still the relay with the two penalty loops, and I do feel like we are seeing more of the Jacqueline that we really this is the enjoyable Jacqueline
that
right?
we all he love, is, right?
Yeah. Yes, right. He's so human, and he has these flaws, but he also has this immense talent, and so he just makes him like you have to watch it, because you don't know, is he going to win? Is he going to just totally collapse? It had gotten sad because we saw so many bad races and so many of the falling aparts, but now this is the fun Jacqueline.
Yeah, it's and I think everybody just wants it so badly for him, right?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. And I thought he had it in the sprint. Of course Eric Perreault comes through and gets his first one. We can talk more about him later, but I really thought that was gonna be the crowning Jacqueline moment.
Yeah.
Can we go back to Jay Thibault for a second?
Yep.
I just thought, coming out of the sprint when he shot 6 for 10 and he was like a minute back. And I think I texted you like, what is happening? Because he just looks looks weird. Like I just hadn't seen him race like that in a long time. Even in Oslo where he didn't look good, like he didn't look like this just looked weird. It just looked strange. He had a solid leg in the relay. I think that Tarja did a ton of work, but then But JT just, yeah, he looked like himself and took Norway into the lead. But the pursuit, like we talked about this already, but it was just like, he just kept hitting his shots and hitting his shots and hitting his shots. And eventually, mm-hmm, like he just sort of persisted. He sort of out, and not to say he wasn't fast. He was, I think, the fastest guy on the course, you know, again, but it didn't feel right, like it was a race that he won on his ski speed until the very end. It felt like a race that it was like sort of an all around just perfect race.
Yeah, and even his one miss in the pursuit, he was like really close.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't a big wild miss or whatever, right?
No. But that last lap, so he was, he comes off of the range or off the penalty loop, and he was 10 seconds back of Jacqueline. And I feel like he closed that 10 seconds in a flash. It was like the next time we saw him, he was already like breathing down Jacqueline's neck. And, I can't imagine what that must be. Jacqueline is fast. And then to have that experience where all of a sudden this guy is just like right behind you.
Well, I do think that Bo was like, well, first of all, Jacqueline typically tends to fade.
Yeah.
You know, as you get close to the end. Plus, he had 3 penalty loops. Plus, yes, you know, yeah, his mental state is, you know, there's a good chance that he's like so busy with being mad at himself. So yeah, I can see that, you know, depending on how Bo was feeling, but I'm assuming he was okay. He thought, I'm just going to go for it right away.
Yeah.
Yeah. It, you know, easy to say in hindsight, but it didn't really shock me that Bo was on him pretty quick. And I actually thought that Tarje and Legrite would also kind of fly by him.
Mm-hmm.
So again, all credits for Jacqueline to hold off Legrite.
I just thought those two surges that JT put in on those hills were just like, mm-hmm, it was just really smart, knowing where Jacqueline was mentally and physically, and just be like, I am stronger than you, and I'm not going to let this come down to the end. Like, I'm getting rid of you now.
And I would have, in a way, it's too bad that Jacqueline couldn't hold, like get in the slipstream of Bo, because I would have liked to see an end sprint between Bo, who's not an end sprint guy, and Jacqueline, who is, but was probably, his tank was dead, even more empty than Bo's. So that would have been an interesting finish.
Well, that was the other thing, right? So and that, I meant to mention this earlier, but JT Bo did all that after having already made up a minute, right? So like he had a minute, like he had to, his legs had to be tired. Obviously he collapsed at the end, but you know, it was still, he has an ability to push himself deep into the red. And I'm sure all these guys do to a certain extent, but I see it more with him.
Well, it must be a family trait, because
right.
He has a brother who seems to be able to do that quite well.
Tarje, that was an awesome push there in the final lap to come around for a second, because they looked like they were about 5 or 6 seconds back for the longest time, and then Tarje just said, it's time to go.
I know, because I remember the commentator saying, Tarje is probably hoping to be able to stay behind JT Bo. And then at the first intermediate, I think Tarje was either leading, or they were kind of, JT was trying to pass him, but couldn't really get past him, or they were but they were very close. So,
yeah, they were together for a couple laps. I think maybe this just my memory, but it felt like they were together for the first couple laps.
I always wonder if, like, it's such an interesting combo, right? Because on the one hand, you could see that Tarje maybe pushed harder, even though he could blow up at the end, to maybe help JT get the win. But then knowing that Tarje is second in the World Cup standing, I can't see. Like, I think at this stage of the season, Tarje's probably going to be like, yeah, brother or not, screw you. I still want to win. Take this thing from you. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You've got 4 of these guys. I only have 1. It's my turn again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, and JT could ideally stay around for a large number of years.
Yes.
I have a feeling that he's not going to be a Bjørndalen.
No, he's not going to be 47. Yeah.
Oh.
But if he's 37, would that stun you?
Mm, Yeah, I have a feeling he's not going to.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's retiring after next year, but I cannot see him go much longer than maybe late 30s.
Yeah. Mid 30s.
Okay. Like by that time, he's probably won the Globe. What?
Do you think he gets the 7?
I think if he wants to, he could.
He's got 4. And so after this weekend, you're counting this one?
Yeah.
After this weekend, he actually expanded his lead from 59 to 62, which is hard to believe after he finished in 17th place.
And Harvey getting second in the pursuit. Yeah.
I still can't believe he expanded his lead, but so he's got 62 points. He's in all likelihood going to win this one. So that'll be 5. Do you think he gets 2 more? And you said you think if he wants to?
Well, yeah, because I mean, what we have, so we have next season and then the season after is the year with the Olympics, right?
Yeah.
So I guess the only downside to the Olympics is that he might have a slower normal season he did, you know, 2 years ago.
2020, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like since he had his child that biathlon became a lower priority, as hard as that is to imagine. And
he's still best in the world, but
yeah, no, but you know what I mean, though. Like, maybe it's more that he adjusted his training regime, and you know, from a few things I've read, it's. With him, it's more like the coaches kind of leave it up to him, whatever he wants to do, because it seems to work.
Did you see the quote? It was from, I think it was a quote from Ziggy Mazet, and I'm going to butcher it, but it was like, yeah, I don't really know what he does from during the week.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think they train together, he and Target.
Yeah.
So, you know, knowing that there's an experienced athlete around him, and obviously they do things that they're ready for the season. So, I don't know.
Yeah. Did you see the interview with him after the race?
Briefly, I think.
So he said that, you know, it was a tough recovery after the relay, and he said he just went into his cave and came out as Batman.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was really funny.
So is Tarje Robin then?
Yes. it was so funny. Oh, man. But yeah, that was an unbelievable race, and we've really only focused on the top two guys, but
unbelievable weekend.
Yeah, the whole weekend.
And it's interesting how racing in not Europe looks so different, right?
So different. Yeah.
And then like the open space, and then
yes,
it really makes you think it's the Olympics.
Yeah, have you been out there? Have you been out to Utah?
No.
So it just, right when they're racing in Europe, it just has this sort of alpine look, and I guess maybe not in Oslo, you're sort of there, but in Östersund, but you've got these big towering pine trees that are, you know, all around the tracks, and you know, these sort of rolling hills, and then you get to Utah, and it's just open plain with the mountains in the background, and it is so different. It looks,
yeah,
and got, that is actually what Utah looks like. That is not like a unique area, so it's just neat to have that kind of different venue, different setting. I just want to say there were not the same crowds that you would see in Europe, but this was better than I had feared. I was worried that it might be like 12 people out there and then the T-Rex, but I am pleased with all the fans I got out there this weekend. So thank you, everybody. Well, and thank you to the kudos, T-Rexes.
Yeah. Kudos to the fans that were out there, because they were lively and
yes, they were
very present, which was awesome. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That was huge.
Yeah.
And thank you to Mr. Douglas Reynolds for the pictures that he shared all weekend. And I've got a few more I'm going to put up too.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're pretty up close, hey?
Yeah, he was right there. He was there all weekend. Got some good shots of some athletes. You know, there was this between the end of the track and then where their cabins that they go into. There was a little stretch there, and he got a lot of good athlete interaction. I didn't post those because they've got family members, and I didn't know how he would feel about his, you know, family being on the internet. So, but like his daughter got to talk to JT Bo, which was awesome. And Tangevold was spending some time even after a poor race. All the athletes were really generous with their time, it looked like.
Yeah. And it's funny because for Camora, I almost feel like the chances of talking to JT Bo are pretty minimal.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because when the IBU Cup was here last season, especially the Norwegians were almost like sheltered by the 10 coaches and techs around them.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured that would be worse when they're here for the World Cup. But, and then you see this little girl being able to say hi to him.
Like, yeah. It's pretty cool. I almost wonder if she has a better chance than we do with a media badge.
Well, but you're bringing your kids though, right?
Oh, yes.
Isn't that why you're bringing your kids?
That's exactly it.
So you can say, I've been training Ben. He's a huge fan.
Yeah, I've got a Norway hat, and I'm going to stick it right on Ben, and we'll get right in.
Are you practicing him to puppy eyes?
Oh, he doesn't need practice. He's got it. He sticks out his little lip. He sticks out his little lip and gets this little sad face. He's got it down.
I thought it was something else I was going to say. I forgot. Well, we can talk about it later.
Sorry, go ahead.
Taking a quick break from the races, I had a note that Claire Egan is no longer on the IBU Athletes Committee.
She's not.
And I don't know if Lesher still was or if he got out last year. Mm-hmm. But Hecky Gross and Simonator are part of the IBU Athletes Committee now, together with Johannes Kuhn, Tandrevold, and Seba Samuelsson.
So Claire Egan, she mentioned how, you know, this was part of her plan, is that she wanted to be on there and then stay on for a couple of years after retiring and to give some perspective and then to transfer off. So Ader coming on, does this mean that he's going to stick around for another couple of years? Or is he going to follow the same pattern?
It's because Lesser did the same thing, right?
Yeah.
And if I remember correctly from the chat we had with Claire, is that after you retire, you can stay on for one more season?
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So yeah, who knows? But Ader is probably older than Claire, right?
Oh, much. Yeah. I shouldn't say much.
That's what I figured.
Claire Egan and I are roughly the same age, and then Ader's about 5 years older.
My age.
Yeah, there you go. Ader's, I still love the video that Michael Roche did at Worlds with him and Hauser, and he was playing Ader with the walker.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember this?
Yeah. Oh, but I mean, Michael Roche's videos are
hysterical.
Always a guarantee for a good laugh.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty cool. I appreciate it's, you know, different perspective, right? So it's not just, you know, mm-hmm. Sweden and Norway and France. You know, we get some, you know, Central Europe to get some representation on there is good.
Mm-hmm. I lost my track of thought now all of a sudden. Oh, well, no, yeah. What did you think of the scheduling that they did one relay and a sprint and then sprint and relay?
Interesting. I think that the athletes didn't enjoy it as much for the women, the sprint and then relay and then pursuit. We saw Simone and Batazzi take the relay off. What Breza Boucher did during the relay, I'm not sure. And I say that because she did not appear to go 100%, or she was really tired and had a bad recovery. But that was her performance in the relay just didn't look like what we would normally see. And then Tangevold, of course, raced all 3 days. It was interesting. I don't know if it gave them the, I don't know. It was from a viewing perspective, it was interesting to have different events on different days.
Mm-hmm.
From a competition standpoint, I don't know if it was the best for the competition.
Although the women's race was pretty darn exciting, the pursuit.
It was very exciting, yeah. I just wonder, Did it negatively impact Brissat-Bousset and Tangevold having had three races, whereas Simon and Vitazzi took the day off in between, which I guess was their choice, but.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, we don't know if they took it off or if they were just not feeling well, yeah. Right?
Well, recovering at 1,700 meters, not easy.
Well, and I think for Vitozzi, the chances of meddling were smaller than usual with Veer not being there, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if that played a role at all, but it's just, I don't know. It's hard to say because even if the relay would have been on the last day, there might have still been athletes that would rest to get ready for Camor.
Yeah. Oh,
like
yeah,
you
no,
said, I really like to have like a different type of, like have to have a team event and a non-team event on both days.
Yes. Yeah. As a spectator, that was great. I thought it was fun to sort of break it up and gave you two very different types of events to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so from that perspective, I would love to see more of it. Yeah.
And quite the start for the race weekend with the US.
Oh my gosh.
Outperforming themselves again and still leaving room for improvement. Unfortunately, Jake Brown couldn't repeat his previous relay fourth leg. Not to say that he did bad, but he just wasn't able to keep up with the shooting. But
really proud of him, though, because it came down to he had one target remaining, and he had used up both of his extra rounds. And if he had missed it, right, then you know USA falls down a little bit. But that was a major clutch shot. So I was really really proud of him for that.
Absolutely, yeah. And I thought he had more than one shot that he had to shoot to avoid the penalty loop.
He did. I think the last two were must hits. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was really good. And that whole team, like, they're so young. I mean, Jake Brown is let's call it more experienced.
Yeah.
But Campbell, right? And then you have Germain and Bonucci.
Bonacci. Yeah.
Like, that's,
it's so much fun. I'm going to pat myself on the back. So way back in our season preview, I think I said that I had high expectations or high hopes for the team this year, and it wasn't this high. I'll say that it was not this high. This was incredible. And Germain wasn't even on this relay. It was Doherty, who's still somehow only like 27 or 28. So
right.
I think if Germain can come up next year, I think that there's a chance that they could find a podium in the next year or two.
And what a good marriage between Campbell Wright and the U.S., right? Like, it's a good boost for the U.S. team, and it's probably a big boost for Campbell Wright, although it sounded like he was already practicing with the U.S. team anyway before, but, you know, it
probably
doesn't,
gets a little
hasn't
more
done
support
him any
now.
Harm.
No, certainly not, right? Because he was, what, sixth in the sprint, and so that's he just keeps setting his own personal bests. Mm-hmm. I think
well, and he's in the race for a long time.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. And that's it's very cool.
It has gotten to the point where it's just not surprising to see him in the race. It's still really cool, mm-hmm. but it's not surprising. And I haven't felt that way about an American biathlete in 6-7 years now. 8 years.
Mm.
Whenever that last generation started to retire out. But because we had, let's see, I'm pulling up his most recent finishes because he's gone 11th, 12th, 20th, 18th, 8th, 18th, 6th, 14th, which is just a really nice run of consistency. And like you said, he's not finding the top 20 at the end of the race. It's like he's in the mix, right?
He's
the entire time.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah.
And also, Germain, I believe, was born in France, or he has French parents, or there's a French connection as well. So we're just collecting, we're collecting athletes from all over the country, or all over the world, excuse me. So we just need to find our Norwegian, and we'll be good to go.
Well, maybe Boten has some connections.
Boten,
isn't
or,
that awesome? I just love that when you know, Boten comes on the team. Obviously, he has a great IBU Cup season so far. Then gets to race like the second last spot because you know, there's five Norwegians in front of him that get to pick first.
Yeah.
And then he's challenging for the lead.
I know.
Like, how absurd is that?
I think I read somewhere that there were eight Norwegians who started on the World Cup this year and all eight made a podium. But I think the awesome thing about Boaten too is that through the first shooting, I think he had like the 24th fastest time.
Really?
In the sprint. Yeah, it was not very good, or maybe it was like 20th or 17th, but it was not near the top. And then, you know, there he moved right up after the second shooting and then just kept blasting his way forward.
I wonder if that was tactical to take it easy on the, because it's interesting how tactics seemed to change after the first race.
Oh yeah,
from people racing in their normal pace to very slow, and then leave some for later. And I mean, it's a big adjustment, obviously, with the altitude. But I also, you know, for a lot of racers, the time change. Mm-hmm. I would say all racers, because even the North Americans are coming from being in Europe for a number of months. And then the dry air is also something that I think a lot of people have to get used to, because you go from a, you know, 80 plus, if not 90 plus humidity to 60 or so. And it's not going to be much different in Camor, I would assume. And that's, you don't notice it right away, but especially when you exert yourself, the recovery is hard, and you get a really, really raspy throat. And
if you've got asthma,
not ideal.
If you've got asthma, it's terrible.
Yeah.
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 I don't know if you saw Johanna Tallaherm when she finished her race after the sprint.
No.
She finished and she's like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she it's tough. It's
not long. She commented afterwards that she had pneumonia earlier in the year, and she really felt it after that race. But yeah,
do you happen to know, does the humidity have any impact on the amount of oxygen in the air? Like, does the humidity in the air carry oxygen, so to speak?
No.
Do you know?
The altitude obviously is the biggest thing.
Right. There. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Humid air decreases inflammation in the lungs. We do know that. So the more dry the air, the more irritation, the more inflammation in the lungs. More inflammation, so there's going to be less oxygen going across the lungs. So there's less oxygen in the air, and then less of it even still is making it across the membrane into the blood.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it really becomes a problem.
But you
mentioned it, but you could really watch in the first, especially the men's relay. And I don't remember it as much in the women's sprint, but guys going hard, and then they got to the standing shooting, and their rifles were moving. And you it's just a huge.
Although those races were also pretty windy, right?
Yeah, they were pretty windy. Yeah, but a huge tactical
combination.
Change, right?
Yeah, oh, for sure.
People were taking it much easier. There were points of the women's relay where I was like, they look like they're going slow, like not just. Mm-hmm. Not fast, but but slow is relative, right? Because they would be leaving me far behind, but certainly not pushing it.
Well, and because there was also, I made a note of Elvira Uberg. I was surprised that she didn't catch up to the girl in front of her. I think that was in the sprint. No, that must have been the pursuit or the relay.
Yeah.
Where she wasn't that far behind leaving the stadium, and I kind of assumed that she would pass the girl in front of her, but can't find a note quickly. But anyway, it was.
I know exactly what you mean. Because Elvira's had some just wicked closing laps this year, and just wasn't there.
No. I was going to ask on a more medical note. So when you come from sea level and you go to Canmore,
say an altitude of maybe like 85 feet, so roughly, I don't know, 20-ish meters. Yeah.
I didn't know you were that high up.
it's a very slow gradient.
Yeah. But, so I forgot what camera is that, but is it about 1200?
I actually haven't pulled up. I can go scroll to it real quick.
Let's just say for sake of discussion, it's 1200. Is there much difference in now going from sea level to 1700 and then down to 1200? Or no, going
you haven't
from
had long enough. You won't. You'll be more acclimated, right? But you won't. You won't. Yeah. There's no long term.
It's not like
no
now they're going down 500 meters or whatever the distance is.
If they
or
stayed the at 1700 meters for a month, then yeah,
sure.
Then there would be some advantage. Okay. But we talked a lot about the men's race. I don't think we've really talked about the men's or the women's at all. But and not because it wasn't spectacular. It's just that the men's was so overwhelming.
Well, as how about the women? I think it was just the order of racing.
Yeah. How about Lou?
Well, without wanting to say I told you so, but you remember that we talked about Tandervoll that I just didn't feel the coolness or maturity was quite there.
Yeah.
And Lou did.
Yeah, I know.
And it showed. Like, I totally missed. Apparently, Lou kind of got in the way of Vitozzi in the final sprint of the pursuit. I missed that. And in hindsight, I wonder if that's why she was kind of held back with the celebration.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, I thought it was just her way of, yeah, great that I won, but this is not what I came here for. I won the Globe at the end of the season, so.
Mm-hmm. So twice she was, I mean, she was at the front of the race for a long time, and twice she was in the shooting with Tandervold and then Vitozzi, and it just didn't appear to have any nerves at all. And it's easy to say that now because she hit the targets, right? But she's something else.
Yeah. She's
getting faster, and her finishing sprint is almost second to none at this point.
Well, and the fact that, you know, she's new on the World Cup.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
As a full season, right? And we talked about this before, too. Even if she doesn't win, you know, she's still on the podium or still in the top six.
Yep.
Almost every single time.
Well, and look at this.
She had lower results, but yeah.
She missed two races because of COVID. She right now is 140-ish points back of Tangerfold. She is averaging 50 points per race, basically. So she would be, if you just gave her those 50 points, which it's not that easy. I know it changes everything, but she would be in second place right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she would be, what,
if she missed two races, you said.
I think she came back for the mass start. She only missed two.
Yeah, but so she would have had an extra 100 points if she gets 50 average.
Yeah. Did I say it wrong? So, yeah, so she would be 928 points.
All right.
By the way, Tangervold owes her something, because that final sprint to beat Vitozzi gave Tangervold an extra 15 points in the overall race, which she may need.
Oh, totally. Well, did you see the... I guess Lou cutting off Vitozzi, or
I didn't see. I saw the interview where she mentioned she did it, but I did not pick up on it when it happened. And I will be honest, I have not rewatched it.
And again, so I'm just basing it on the commentators, which is I'm kind of uncomfortable doing, but
for a number of reasons,
they were basically saying that Vitozzi could have put in a protest and she didn't. Vitozzi was just like, well, that's just part of racing. Which, you know, a lot of respect for that.
Yeah.
Especially if Vitozzi would end up, you know, not getting the Globe on like 15 points or whatever, right? But I mean, it's also, I think when you know that you probably wouldn't have beat her anyway, it
makes it easier. Yeah.
Like, you have the right to put in a protest, I guess. But from a sportsmanship perspective, well, I'm just impressed that Vitozzi's like, no, it's fine. Right.
Very impressed. She's a very, just a relaxed personality. And I think that she's just, she's not one of those people who is you know, I just chalk it up to the sport, right? This happens. It'll, right. You know, at some point, I'm sure she has, not intentionally, of course, but she has been benefited by a similar situation, and you just, you know,
right.
As long as it wasn't intentionally, just let it go. And it is what it is. It's a competitive sport, and you got these long poles and you got big skis, and eventually at some point you're going to clip somebody else.
They're going to collide. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some quick stats of the women's sprint. It's not a really, well, you know that Lampage had to do another 750 meters in penalty loops. Do you think she was still the fastest?
No.
She was. By 12 really? And a half seconds.
Faster over Brazel Boucher? She,
yes.
God.
Let that sink in. I mean, 12 and a half is crazy. Already, you know, it's yeah. quite the distance. And then yeah. with, and I mean, did Justine have one penalty?
Yeah, she did.
Trying to remember. Yeah.
yeah. She did, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, before we move on.
No, I was going to say, and then Justine Brézard-Boucher was 23 seconds faster than Lou Jeanmonod.
Good was gracious. Lou was third.
And yeah.
Lou was third?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the fastest? Is that the best? You don't have this, I'm sure. The best course time rank of her career? I'll look that up while you're telling me the next thing.
Yeah. Oh, so shooting time, who do you think was the fastest shooter? And I didn't take into account if there were hits or misses, but just the shooting time for the race?
Simon.
Dickinson.
Oh, way to go.
Yeah. Simone was actually fifth, I think, for shooting time, but range time, Simone was first.
These are Jeanmonod's, sorry, we're all over the place. These are her course time ranks over the last 10-ish races. Fourth, fifth, 15th, fifth, fourth, ninth, second, third, third.
Not
I didn't know she had, I knew she was fast. I didn't know she had that kind of speed in her.
Yeah.
She's going to win a globe. She keeps this up. She's going to win one.
What are
maybe next year?
What are her chances to win it this time?
Oh, Jeanmonod?
Yeah.
0%.
Really?
I think so. She's like 100 points, 140 points back.
So what if she wins twice?
She would have to win twice plus a third. So let's give her 180, 240 points. So then Tangevold would, I'm doing math on the fly. So 240 points.
And then imagine Tangevold at the first standing missed the first shot.
Tangevold would have to
freaks out completely.
Yeah. 10th three times.
I don't know. I think
it'd be pretty hard.
I can still see it happen.
So if Tangevold gets 10th three times, if Tangevold gets 10th three times and Jeanmonod goes first for a second, Tangevold would still win. It's just
I'm not
a tough hill to climb.
Yeah.
Fine. 1% chance.
For shooting time, what was interesting, so Dickinson's shooting time in a women's sprint was 47.7 seconds.
For the sprint?
Yeah. Vogt.
Wow.
Second last, she was 39.1 seconds slower than Dickinson.
Say it again.
So Dickinson standing and prone shooting combined 47.7 seconds.
Yeah.
Vogt was 39.1 seconds slower than that.
Whoa.
So it's not quite double the time, but
man. That's rough.
It's really a tough balance to be like, well, is one miss worth the risk? Because that would be, say, 25 seconds extra, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think for the relay, I wrote it down as well. But I can't find it right now. The women's pursuit. So the shooting time, Simone was fastest, then Hannah Oberg, and then Passler. Vogt was third last, and she was 58.3 seconds slower than Simone. Now, again, this is four shooting, so it was probably around, what, a minute and a half-ish?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, she loses almost a minute just in shooting time.
Speaking of women. Anyway. No, I was going to say, speaking of women who have focused on shooting time, Anna Gandler, who, you know, has mentioned to us a couple times, you know, that she's trying to get out of the thought process of trying to be perfect. Yep. And she had a great weekend, by the way. Mm-hmm. But in the relay in particular, her prone shooting was 25.4 and her standing was 24.3. And those were, for her, those were excellent. It was just part of a just amazing weekend for her. She finished sixth in the sprint and eighth in the pursuit, sixth being a new career best. And she mentioned with us that her goal for the season was a flower ceremony, and she did it. And so I'm extremely proud of her. And then that anchor leg that she had for Austria, she got them up to fourth, and fourth is the all-time best relay for Austria. So heck of a weekend. So congratulations to Anna Gandler.
And her quote-unquote family has some very good results in Camor, right? Because her boyfriend won last year in the IBU Cup.
Yeah, Emilien Claude, by the way, finished the season on a very high note in Obertiliac, and we'll talk about him at some point in the future when we talk about the IBU Cup and Junior Worlds. But anyway, I'm super happy with Anna Gandler, and this is clearly a sign that if you want good luck, come talk to us. We are clearly just, you know, we're blessing people right now.
Any athlete,
if you're listening, you know, come here. We'll be happy to spread it around.
We're doing sessions the whole summer.
Seriously, really happy for her.
Share the luck. And talk about perfection. I literally took a screenshot of her standing position, and I'm going to try to duplicate it for myself.
And this is not like it was gorgeous. And I don't mean this because she's a woman or anything like that, but just like the way she was, it looks so solid.
Like,
right?
She seriously looked like if you bump into her when she's standing like that, there's no way you're going to move her.
No. And also, like, did you see her ski form this weekend?
Oh, yeah.
I was just like, she looks so smooth. Flying. I posted a message on Twitter. I was like, she looked like she's got the look, right? Like, she looks like she's going to be awesome in the next year or two.
It's almost to the point where it seems too stiff, because her like basically from the hips up, it's just like it's straight. It barely moves.
Yeah.
Or obviously her arms, but. You know, especially at the end of a race, you see a lot of athletes kind of hunched over and moving their heads all over the place, like trying to do a Benny Dole imitation. And she is just solid. Like, so still at that point. And like you said, she's not skiing slow by any means. So,
no.
Yeah. It's
she looks really good. Like, if she grabbed a top five this weekend in Canmore, like, I will be overjoyed and I will be happy to celebrate with her. But I would not be stunned.
No. No, I agree. Totally.
Yeah. Super happy for her. A really joyous person. And you know, it's pretty cool. Also in the women's races, we've sort of gotten used to seeing it, but Preza Boucher with another win in the sprint. That is now her sixth win of the season. Before this year, she had five wins total. And I think that I've just sort of gotten dulled to seeing her do this, because dulled's not the right word. It just isn't stunning. It's not surprising. She is awesome. And she's in third place in the overall. This is her first, like, she had a whole year off, her first year back from maternity leave. And she is in the mix for the overall globe. She might not win it, but she has six wins, including one of those being at the World Championships, but just a phenomenal season. And no signs of slowing down. She's obviously had some high races and some low races. Easily the most wins of anybody.
She's racing a bit of a Julia Simone season.
It's like Julia Simone, Julia Simone, like with the top end, like with the wins, before, right?
Yeah. Because she either is unbeatable or she has a bit of beatable. An off day,
or quite beatable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but I just I. I I don't think that I have done enough this season to appreciate what she's done, and it's been awesome. Mm-hmm. And she has made me learn how to pronounce her name. So, way to go.
Well, that was the person that responded to you, right? On Twitter, I believe.
Yes, but I appreciate it. But I wouldn't, you know. we talked about Tangible a little bit. Is she in trouble? That standing shooting looks locked in Oslo. Looked very good in the sprint where she went 10 for 10. Was very bad in the pursuit.
Yeah. I don't see her as a lock-in, which I really wish her well, and I'd be super excited for her to win the Globe. But mm-hmm. as a spectator, I could not be happier that, you know, we go into this last weekend. And before the season, my fear was that everything would be locked up after Oslo and people would not even come over. And now in Camor, we're going to see the true conclusion of the season, because it's not set in stone at all. Right?
No.
I haven't done the calculations, but I'm guessing based on, you know, worst case scenario, Tanrevold does not perform well, how many people can still win? Like five?
I think technically like that. It's more than that, but really it's down to her.
Sure.
And...
Yeah. Like a lot of things have to go bad for Tanrevold and Vitozzi, but I mean, counting up the points in an ideal situation for, say, someone like Jean Monod or Simone or...
Oh, yeah.
They can still win it.
They can. Elvira, still technically in it. Lena Hackey-Gross actually is still technically in it, because she's only, a handful of points behind Elvira, I believe.
Right.
So it is not set in stone. I think that there's a real chance that Breza Boucher or Vitozzi could come by at the end and win it. I think on the men's side, the pressure's going to win or going to build.
Do you think Johannes Antaria will still share a room?
Yes, I do.
Do you think they'll try to sneak something in each other's breakfast or something like that?
What do you think the side bet is between them?
Sorry?
What do you think the side bet is between them for who wins it? Like, I have to wash your car?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Tarja is still the older brother, right? So,
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I don't know.
So I calculated the numbers here. So Vitozzi needs 25 points per race. Breza Boucher, 28 points per race, and Simone, 34 points per race.
Ahead of...
Yeah, to gain on Tangible.
And it's typically 90 points and then 60 points, right? For one and
90,
two?
75, 60,
or 75,
50.
Sorry, yeah. So really, even for Simone, if she wins and Tanrevold gets third or lower...
Yep. Tanrevold is still technically going to keep her nose ahead.
Sure. Yeah. But I mean, it will be very, very tight.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I tried to do some calculations of how they got here, and it's pretty interesting. So for wins, Breza Boucher, these are only World Cup, not World Championships, because they don't count anymore. Mm-hmm. But for wins, Breza Boucher has 5, Tangevold 3, Vitozzi 2, and Simone 2. Podiums, Tangevold 8. Breza Boucher 7, Simone 6, Vitozzi 5. Top 10s, Vitozzi and Tangevold both 11, Simone 8, Breza Boucher 7. And then top 10s, Vitozzi 16, Simone 14, Tangevold 13, and Breza Boucher 12. So basically the takeaway from that is Breza Boucher is benefiting greatly from those extra wins that she had, and not so great at other places. Tangevold has a higher percentage of her top 10s as top 5s, and that's where she's making up all the points.
Are you rubbing it in our earlier discussion that you're not mentioning Jean Monod in his list?
No. Actually, what happened was I calculated all this before the pursuit race, and so then when she won the pursuit race, I was like, I just don't have the time to add all this back up. So...
No, and I'm even looking at like the graph. It's so Vitozzi was leading the World Cup at some point. Preutz was leading the World Cup. Jean Monod was leading it. Tanrevold, Justine Préjean-Boucher. We've had, oh yeah, and then Tanner Volt's been leading it, and Vitozzi and Boucher really close for second.
Yeah, like, this run for Tanner Volt, I think, is the longest that anybody's been in yellow all season. Right. But it's never been solid for anybody. As a fan, I'm really excited to see how it shakes out.
Oh,
as a Tangerwald fan, I'm very nervous. I was feeling really good until the standing shootings yesterday, or whatever, 12 hours ago, whatever time it was. But
that's so interesting for, like, the first race in Camor. If Tanrevolt shoots clean,
if she has three misses. Yeah.
Could go downhill very quickly. But
if she gets a podium in the sprint, I think it's over. Because I think it'd be because that would set her up so well for the pursuit. So it would sort of but if she doesn't, right? If she's like ninth in the sprint, it's wide open.
Yeah.
Speaking of races that are really close, there's actually an even closer race. And I don't know if you saw it. The U25 for the men is 18 points. Jacquemel's up by 18 points.
It's funny
because
I was going to ask.
Yeah.
And then I was like, no, that's... Wow.
Eric Perreault has put on a huge charge, and his win in the sprint, which was awesome, by the way, to see, has sliced the lead down to 18. And Jacquemel's at great risk now of twice losing the blue bib on the last weekend of the season.
The last weekend. Yeah. He's been strong recently, though, right, Jacquemel?
He was better yesterday in the pursuit. Perreault just, yeah, that win was massive for him.
Mm-hmm.
Also, is Perreault, if you had to rank the French men right now, would you put him first? I think they're all really tight.
I think if I had to put my money on him right now, for sure.
Yeah.
Because although, and it's a note I had for later on, but might as well. So I looked at QFM. He would have been actually right at around the rank one spot because, you know, you take the 2 minutes off and then you add about 25 seconds for a penalty loop and then maybe a few seconds for being just a little bit slower because he had to do the extra 150 meters. He would be right at the time of Perreault.
Yeah. You know, gotta use that head. Gotta use that noggin.
Yeah, and I looked that up too. So far, the jury decision of penalty loop not done 2 extra minutes was the first time this season in 64 races, including relays. And in the last 3 seasons up till now, so starting 21-22 season, there was 145 non-team events, or sorry, non-team races, and there were 6 incidents of penalty loop not done. Of the active athletes, it was Dominguez in 21-22, Benita Pfeiffer 22-23, and then QFM this season. And then 3 other athletes.
I thought you were going to say he did it once previously.
No. But obviously it does happen, but not very, very common. And very expensive. In the sense of, you know, racing for first spot and now becoming or getting in 31st.
31st, which then, of course, sets up the pursuit to, you know, like if you're starting first or second in the sprint, you could back it up. But 31st, you're way behind the eight ball.
Yeah. Double whammy.
Yep.
Another interesting stat that I did not come up with, I forgot who the person was who mentioned it on Twitter. J.T. Bowe won 8 sprints last year. He won 0 this year.
He's got one more chance.
Got one more chance, yeah. But that's quite...
He's going to do it just for us.
Could be.
Yep. So he also, I think he won the individual discipline globe, and he all but won the pursuit discipline globe yesterday, because I think he's up by like 70 points on... Dalla Skibdal, I think, is in second, but so that's 2 discipline globes he gets at least. Right. And I guess if he wins the mass start, he could conceivably win that one too.
Yeah.
The women's, by the way, the women's, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the women's pursuit globe, I think there are five women who could still win it. Wow. It's like five women within like 35 points. It's really close.
We already talked at the beginning of the season how the women's competition is so much closer.
Yeah.
But man, they're emphasizing that really strongly this year, hey?
Wait, they're always closer. And then this year it's like, I feel like there are even more women than I ever anticipated being in the mix.
Yeah.
It's fun. And then you look at how much youth there is. And we've been talking about doing a junior Worlds and an IBU Cup recap at some point. There's even more talent on the way up when you look at the German and the French and the Austrian women and the Italian women. And it's just, it is crazy.
Well, it's like the Germans have this bag of hardly known athletes that every World Cup they throw one out there. And
Julia Thalheimer, Johanna Poof, Julia Kink, you know.
Oi, oi, oi. It's unbelievable. Yeah. And how they all, like, they must do something right in their mental part, the mental preparation part in their training. Because I think Julia Kink didn't know until the morning of the race that she was racing.
Wow.
I believe, because one of the German athletes was sick. And she held, I mean, yeah, she couldn't quite keep up with the skiing, but did she shoot clean on the relay?
I'm looking it up right now.
Forgot.
Because you just made me think about it. She had one extra round.
Okay. Well, yeah. That's just incredible.
That's just like, well, it's just like Schneider at the World Championships.
I know. Yeah.
They pull her in and, okay, we'll get a medal.
It's maybe fine. That's the thing. You don't tell the young ones until like a couple hours before the race, and then they just don't have time to think about it.
Well, they started Selena Groshen and Julia Kink, and they still came in second. By the way, hats off to Norway for winning
leg.
That. Yeah, I know. Well, I was just going to say hats off to Norway for winning.
For sure.
They, you know, with this collection of women, it would have been easy to see them not, you know, having a great season with the relay. Mm-hmm. And yet they won the relay competition for the season for the first time, I think, in 5 years, 4 years. So good for them. But
and I don't know.
I
you think about the first two teams. Yeah. No, but the first two teams, like if they would have gotten 8th and 12th, you'd be like, not to say they're not good, but I mean, everything has to kind of work out when you throw some young ones in there and Uni Arnaclife was having a up and down couple of races.
Yeah.
And
Caroline Knoten has turned into a stellar athlete, though.
Yeah, although I was really surprised that she was basically behind Folk the whole race.
She was,
Ski wise, but actually Folk was had a really good. She was second in her leg, just behind Davidova.
Second in her leg, Davida had a hell of a leg. That was, I think she was, I think I did the calculation. She was one of like two women that actually moved their team closer to Norway for the entire relay, not that leg, but for the entire relay, like of the women who were up near the top, like everybody else moved further back and she actually got them closer. Vogt though, her, I was going to save this for later, but her pursuit, fourth course time rank, she went from 36th to 16th.
Yeah.
Every now and then she flashes that speed and I'm like,
it's in there.
Where is that? Yeah. Just need to see more of it. And she once again is going to finish better in the overall this year than she did last year. You know, I just keep waiting for the big breakthrough to come.
Yeah, I think it's finding that balance for the shooting, really.
Yeah. Yep.
Because, you know, if you win 30 seconds in skiing, but then you lose a minute in the shooting range.
Yeah, I know.
Quickly, since we're talking about women's pursuit, who do you think was the fastest skier, keeping in mind that Lampage had 8 misses?
You're going to tell me it was Lampage?
Lampage by 29.1 seconds over Vitozzi, who was second. Jaminot was third and Vogt fourth.
That's not fair.
And she had only one miss, I think, in the prone shoot.
Yeah. And then just collapsed in the standing.
Yeah. 8 misses.
Man.
It's still the fastest by a significant margin. Blah, 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 blah. Absurd.
Any other big thoughts? I got some stray career bests.
Well, for the women's relay, I wanted to have a shout out to Canada, who came in 11th, which is really, really good. And combined with that, I wanted to mention specifically Emma Lunder, who's after an up and down season with some personal reasons why things were not going well. She has a really strong finish so far. I really, really hope that she can continue that to a season high in Canmore.
100%.
She was 14th in the sprint with 0 misses, 9th in the relay loop 1 with 3 spare rounds. And in the pursuit, she was 17th with 0.300.
Yeah. So I was super, super proud of her. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was definitely one of my big things here. Already mentioned Knoten, but she was 5th in the sprint, 4th in the pursuit. That's now 5 total top fives. She only had 4 before the season, 12 top tens. She only had 7 before the season. Those are career, 7 before the season. So that's just a heck of a season from her. Teresa Vorbonikova, which you're going to laugh at because I find a way to mention her about every weekend. But
well deserved, though, to be mentioned.
Yeah. 12th this week. So she's gotten a 5th, 8th, 16th, and 12th in her last 4 races. Pretty good.
And in the total standing, she is ahead of Davidova. And she's
is she ahead of Davidova now?
Yeah. She has so she's 334, and Davidova has 301.
Nice. She's the top Czech woman.
Yeah.
Also, Regina Ermitz finished 15th in the sprint. Was that?
No, I was going to mention Estonia.
Yeah.
You know,
I was going to get there right after this.
Ermitz. Yeah.
Ermitz 15th and 19th. In her last 5 races, she's finished 13th, 12th, 52nd, 15th, and 19th. Those are 13th, 12th, 15th, and 19th are her 4 top finishes ever, all in the last 5 races. So,
wow.
Pretty good little run there. And then you were going to mention Dominguez.
Well, just the Estonian women in general, they seem to, they really got it together for the world championships and been very, very strong.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was going through the jury decisions to look up the penalty loop missed, I saw Dominguez's disqualification again for taking her skis off or standing on something. And it makes me mad.
I know.
But c'est la vie.
She finished 6th in the pursuit. That is tying her career best ever. Did you see the celebration they had for her? I posted a picture of it from Douglas Reynolds. I put it up on Twitter. I'll send it to you later. But they were hoisting her up on their shoulders for her career best.
Oh, cool.
She was 10th in the sprint, and I think that she is right now 21st in the overall. Yep. And that would be the best ever by an Estonian woman, and I think she's pretty much locked into that at this point, having the best ever overall finish for an Estonian woman. So huge congratulations to Tuula Dominguez.
Yeah, no kidding. And can you remind me, did Baiba at some point say that they had Estonian waxers, or am I making it up?
Nope, not making it up. Nope.
So maybe the best waxers in the business. Expertise.
The best waxers in the business.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else before we get out of here?
French waxers they have found something, man, for warm conditions.
Did they ever? Yeah.
Clearly, the majority of their skiers were performing really great. Of course, they could have also just had a training regime that focused on peaking at the end of the season, but they're all super fast, and they must have super found something, fast. Right?
Yeah, yeah. They were struggling earlier in the year, but ever since Worlds, they have just been on it. And I'll look ahead at the weather in Canmore, and I think they're gonna make use of it once again.
Yeah, yeah. That's not. I don't think we have to worry about races being canceled for being colder than minus 18.
Nope. Nope. I think we have to worry about people sweating to death.
One last thing. I shared with you the semi-hidden message that Justine Préjean-Boucher had at the ceremony. If you guys want to look it up, when she puts her middle finger in a certain position, supposedly to hold the belt buckle, but any idea who that would be to?
Awesome, by the way. Yeah, it's probably me. She's like, just learn my name, man.
No, just kidding. Yeah, no, it was cool, hey? They all seem to be like, the first day, people were like, oh, what is this? And then, oh, a belt.
Eric Perreault posing with it was fantastic. Oh, I meant to mention this too. The men's sprint. So speaking of youth, the men's sprint in the top six, we had Perreault winning it at 22 years old. Bolton is 24 and he was in third. And Campbell Wright is 21 and he was in sixth. So there is a new generation of men. You know, Jacquemel in eighth was 23 years old. So they're coming.
That makes me think of Hardwick, who literally skied, 50 meters in the... Like, do you think he went out not knowing that he was going to be lapped soon? Or do you think he was hoping that he could stay ahead of... Who was it? Bo? No, Christensen, I guess.
No, I'm sure he knew. And then he didn't race the pursuit either, so...
All right. Yeah, I feel...
He'll be back. He'll be back. It's been a hard year. He's been sick and everything, so...
Yeah.
All right, last thing, and then we're gonna get out of here.
Yeah,
who's your pick for women's overall champ?
Lou Jeanmonod.
For real?
Well, I said she wasn't out of it, but yeah, the odds are not in her favor. You know what? So what I'm doing is looking at the standings and I'm looking at Fatosi, Préjean-Boucher, or Simon.
Yeah.
Which also means that I, as much as I really, really wish for Tendreville that she can pull it through and that she's going to prove me wrong, but I think she's not going to stand up, mostly mentally.
I'm betting Fatosi, so I'm right there with you.
Mm-hmm. Men?
JT.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I'm going to say Tari.
Yeah. Make it happen. All right. Let's get out of here.
Yeah. Okay, man.
Have a wonderful week, everybody. And we will.
Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Yep.
Yeah. From Canmore.
Yeah. Well, live and in person.
Going to be good. Yes.
All right. Take care. Have a good week.
Bye.
Bye.